Welcome to Parents' Perspective. You can put your things over here, Bradley's mom motioned to 10-year-old cousin Jack. Bradley's so excited that you're visiting. Hope you don't mind sleeping on the top bunk. Your cousin has been organizing his toys all around the place, so just don't trip. What's all this stuff? Jack motioned to several piles of dolls lying near a dollhouse on the floor. Oh, came the hesitant response. That's Bradley's doll collection. He, keeps it in here. Jack wrinkled his face and walked gingerly around the dolls. Doesn't Brad have a soccer ball or anything? He asked. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about gender-variant children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests co-facilitate a support group for parents of children aged 3 to 12 who have gender-variant traits at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. Catherine Turk is a clinical specialist in adult psychiatric and mental health nursing with a psychotherapy private practice. Her specialties include women's health and reproductive issues and gender and sexuality issues. She works with Dr. Edgardo Menviel in the outreach program for children with gender variant behavior and their families, sponsored by Children's National Medical Center. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Ms. Turk.
Thank you.
Dr. Edgardo Menviel is a child and adolescent psychiatrist at the Children's National Medical Center and faculty member at the George Washington University School of Medicine. His professional interests include adolescent development, the development of gender and sexual identity, and parenting. He and Catherine Turk developed the support group for parents and children with gender-variant traits at Children's National Medical Center, and they work together in the outreach program there. We're so glad to have you back to talk with us again, Dr. Menviel.
Thank you for inviting me.
Both of you work with children with gender-variant traits and their families. What do we mean by this kind of terminology?
What we mean is children that don't fit the usual pattern of gender-typical behaviors. When we are talking about gender-typical behaviors, we're referring to the fact that even by age 2 or 3, boys seem to prefer certain things and girls seem to prefer different things when it comes to play, when it comes to clothing, their hairstyle, and so forth.
Is this a social thing in terms of Western society, or it's all over the world they prefer certain things?
Well, it seems that in most cultures of the world, boys and girls, male and females, have differences in their roles. And those roles seem to be different from very early on in life.
What's the difference between our gender and our sex?
Gender is the way that we think about ourselves. If we think of ourselves as male or female, that's gender. Sexual orientation is the person that we are attracted to, physically and emotionally.
It's hard to think of kids at 5 or 6 having a sexual orientation.
Well, children have a sexual orientation at that age. We don't know it, and they don't know it, but they do. What we do observe is their gender behaviors. We observe how they relate to the things that are interesting to one gender or the other. So we have boys that are typically masculine, in terms of their interests and their behaviors. We have girls that are typically feminine in the same way. But then we have boys and girls who are not, that they are gravitating more towards the other gender's typical behaviors or interests.
Is that something that parents should be concerned about if they have a girl who really doesn't want to play with the dolls and she wants to be out kicking the soccer ball all the time? Is that like a sign?
That may be an indication, but what we are referring to is really a pattern that is persistent and intense and that persists over time, not an isolated interest or something that goes by in a short while.
But, of course, you could have an athletic girl.
And you can have an artistic boy. All those things are okay.
The literature between boys and girls is very different. There are studies that indicate that about 50% of women would have called their behavior in childhood as being tomboyish. There are two kinds of tomboys. Tomboys that are kind of casual tomboys, but then there are tomboy girls that are quite extreme. which means that they absolutely refuse to wear a dress.
In girls, usually it does not raise so many questions or worries. It is in boys that people tend to react very negatively because of the stigma that is attached to being a boy and being feminine. So girls are in fact encouraged to be athletic, to be assertive, and to take on, let's call them, typical masculine attributes, whereas boys are highly discouraged from being too gentle, from avoiding rough and tumble, from being interested in girly kinds of things.
When would you say on this age development spectrum do boys and girls develop separate interests?
You can see separate interests as early as 2 years of age. Certainly by ages 4 and 5, boys and girls are already clear about what the rules are about gender. So, for example, if a boy sees another boy playing with dolls and they are 5, he's very likely to make a negative comment about the other boy. And that goes for boys and girls. They have already taken in the rules of gender by age 4 and 5. So when children enter kindergarten, they're pretty much in a social environment where following these rules becomes very important.
That's very interesting, because you always hear from preschool and kindergarten teachers, don't worry if your child is in the dress-up corner trying on clothes that are not for his or her gender. But this sounds like do worry.
Well, perhaps not worry, but, you know, perhaps this is indicating that the child has some cross-gender interests.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of gender stereotyping.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Ms. Catherine Turk and Dr. Edgardo Menviel about gender stereotyping and gender variance.
There's a strong correlation between homosexuality and gender variant interest when it occurs in boys. There is not a very strong correlation when it occurs in girls. So if you see a little boy playing for a long time and very invested in Barbie dolls, the reality is there is a very good possibility that that child is gay, is homosexual. That is his gender, his sexual orientation. That is very hard for parents to come to grips with, but that is a child that really needs the parents' protection and all the things we're going to talk about in terms of what parents can do. With the girls, it is a different issue in that you don't see such a strong correlation between sexual orientation and their interest in gender variant toys and play and so on.
For example, a 5-year-old boy that is very interested in playing with Barbies, likes to dress them up, likes to comb their hair. He might also, for example, look at videos and identify himself with the female characters in the video, Snow White, a princess. He likes to dress up like girls. He might pretend to have long hair, putting a towel over his head. These are the typical behaviors that we see in boys that are gender variant. In girls that are gender variant, what we see is girls that are extremely interested in rough and tumble kind of play, in sports. They tend to be athletic, physical. But more interesting, they are not interested at all, and in fact often reject anything that is associated with feminine. So they don't like pink, they don't like to wear dresses, they don't like to wear long hair.
Now what causes all this?
We don't know for sure what causes this gender orientation. We don't know for sure what causes the typical gender orientation. So gender orientation, we know it occurs very early in life, and there is increasing evidence in research that points in the direction of biology. So we tend to think that these kids are either born this way or something happens very early on in life and that is not something that we can change or that the parents can change. And it's not something that the parents caused.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, when you talk about they play with certain kinds of toys, if a parent has a young child and he or she is listening to this, would it make any sense to then limit the kinds of toys you offer?
Well, I think that your intuition and as a parent, your gut feeling is to, if you don't want to have a certain outcome, you try to encourage your children to do certain things or discourage them. In terms of the toys, first of all, it is not going to make any difference. The child is who the child is going to be. So the manipulation of toys is not going to change that. So what we try to get the parents to do in the group is to do what any good parent would do, which is to let the child play with the things that he's interested in. Now that we've ruled out the fact that this is going to harm him. But there are certain times when playing with a Barbie doll would probably not be in the child's best interest. So the motto is to try to help the child fit in but feel good. So what the parents do is they try, and the kids already know this. I mean, even at a very young age, kids really are aware of peer approval or disapproval. So what the parents try to do is to let the kids express their interest as much as they want to within the home and in situations that are safe. And when the child goes out, then the parents will help the child decide what will be safe to do, what would be in the child's best interest in terms of making friends and getting along in the world. But the emphasis is always in not making the child feel ashamed, but in some way helping the child and children understand this, that the world doesn't always understand every person that exists in it. Your kid goes out, experiences something that's bad, they come home, and the parents say, that's really sad that that person said that bad thing to you. But the fact of the matter is, there are people in the world who don't understand the differences that exist or don't like them. And in some way, the parents in our group do the same thing with their children, and the children understand that it's the world that has a problem, but not them that has a problem, because the parents are approving and supportive, just as we would do with any other difference that we have with our children. That's what we try to teach the parents to do, and that's what parents should be doing, because this difference is not any different than any other difference that a child may have to deal with in the world and be challenged with.
But it's more than just an acceptance, because there's no denial. It's an acceptance, and it's a recognition that the whole world isn't going to treat you the way you're necessarily treated in your home. And it's preparing that child to get along okay in the outside world. That's a tough one,
I think. It's a tough one. It's a tough thing to parent these children, because in some very important way, they're different than you are.
Mm-hmm.
This is very challenging for parents for a variety of reasons. I think we live in a society where there's a great deal of stigma and we cannot avoid it. It becomes part of ourselves to fear or to have a very negative image of gender variance. We tend to reject it. As parents, we have to work on ourselves first to be able to help our children. And sometimes a parent may be supportive, but they may find challenges like the other parent is not, or other family members are very critical if they allow their children to express themselves freely, even inside of their home. It's a challenging job for the parent, because they have to work first on themselves and their spouse, and then they have also to work with the siblings of the child.
It is important for the dads and the uncles and the grandparents not to abandon these little boys because their interests are very different.
Are there things that parents should avoid? Are there pitfalls when you're raising a child who doesn't fit the stereotype?
Well, I think the biggest thing is to avoid shame. gay people have the same kinds of varied childhoods as other people do, and we do not think that all gay people are effeminate. They have the same diversity in behavior that straight people have. Avoid shaming your child, because it is not easy to watch a boy playing with a Barbie doll. And I think that in order to get away from the shame, parents really have to come to grips with the fact that their child may indeed be a gay person. They will not know whether this child is gay or not until the child grows up and is an adolescent and identifies, self-identifies, and that their job now is to imagine what that would be like for them and to educate themselves and rid themselves of the negative stereotypes about homosexuality. That is a big job. But there are a lot of things that people can do. There are movies to look at. There are books to read. And once you have a child like this, I think parents start to become more aware of the issues that gay people face and pay attention to things they wouldn't have. And essentially, they need to prepare themselves for that. We have a parent who showed me a picture of her son, and he was probably about 15 months old, and he has a red purse in his hand, clutched. He's sleeping in his crib with his little jammies on with a little red purse. Now, this child is older now, but this child really is interested in that stuff, and it started when he was that young. There is nothing a parent could do to have a child like a red purse. So the fact of the matter is parents need to let themselves off the hook. These children come from all kinds of families. They've been around forever. They're in every culture, in every ethnic group. So there is nothing that these parents have done wrong. But they do have a lot to do in the future. And that is what the parents with children like this need to begin working on, and they actually have a lot of time to work on it before they're going to find out actually what this child identifies as.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of gender stereotyping.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. Today we're talking with Ms. Catherine Turk and Dr. Edgardo Menviel about gender variance and gender stereotyping.
Be aware that these children are often bullied, that victims mm-hmm. of other kids bullying them, and they don't always tell. We know from studies that children don't always report bullying because they feel ashamed, because they don't want to call attention to themselves, because they feel that parents are not going to do it or adults are not going to be able to stop it. And it is important to be aware of that. Keep an open mind and an open ear as the child grows up.
I want to also address something that we've noticed in the parents. They will find themselves kind of grieving the loss of the child that they thought they were going to have. And that is a part of what everybody goes through. But the fact of the matter is most grief comes and then it goes. And that is an important thing for people to realize, because I think they feel bad and they can't put their finger on what the feeling is.
We've talked about what parents can do and what teachers can do a little bit. How can you tell if your child needs professional help to handle his or her uniqueness?
Well, we think that being gender variant is not necessarily a reason to get professional help or psychotherapy, but there are situations where a child may need professional help, especially if the child is not doing well. If they're not doing well at home or in school or with their friends, if they're showing signs of being depressed or anxious, if the child is crying too much, if the child doesn't want to go to school. Those are situations that may need professional intervention. Now, one has to be very careful about the professional, because there are a lot of professionals that deal with children that are not necessarily experts on these issues. And sometimes what we observe is that they provide the kind of advice that we don't endorse, which is, do not let your child do this and that. That's not an uncommon kind of advice. So parents need to be aware of this and be informed consumers when they go to a therapist. Try to find out what does the therapist think about gender variance and how they approach it.
I think that families, if they can get to the right professional, that can be very helpful. I hope that we can have a lot of support groups around the country so that maybe people can get to support groups that are affirming of these children.
Parents will ask us, is my child going to be gay? We cannot answer one way or the other on any individual case. But what we do know from the research is that boys that have very strong and persistent interest in girl type of interests when they are children, that they have a high likelihood of being gay. We cannot say 100%, but certainly a high likelihood.
We always like to close with more information for our listeners, with resources they can turn to for more on these kinds of issues in families and with their children, and help in raising children with differences. We know that you're both involved with the outreach program for children with gender variant behavior. Would you tell us briefly about the support group that you work with and about the brochure that you've made available?
We have a support group that we have been running for about 4 years, and we have parents from the local area that come on a monthly basis to meet. But we also recently have developed an online discussion group. It's a listserv where people from other areas can join, and the only thing they need to do is give us a call and we'll talk to them on the phone. And if it is appropriate, we'll admit them to the online group and they can talk to other parents that way. And the phone number is 202-884-2504. We have also developed a parent guide. It's called If You Are Concerned About Your Child's Gender Behaviors. And we have this guide online. It can be downloaded. And the address for that is www.dcchildrens, that's one word without apostrophe, .com/gender variance, one word. Parents that want to email us can do that at pgroup, one word, at cnmc.org. The brochure can be downloaded from the website and is available in English and Spanish. We have a list of suggestions in the brochure, so I suggest that people look at the resources there.
We're extremely fortunate to have had two wonderful resources like Ms. Turk and Dr. Menviel to help us understand the world of gender stereotyping and gender variance among children. Thank you both so much for your insights and guidance today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and mention show 190. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.